Good morning, everyone. This morning it is Sunday, May 6, 2018. We give you a warm welcome to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we will start the day with our morning prayer. Lawrence.
Yes, this is from Miscellany. Christian Science Healing by Mary Baker Eddy, page 220. I believe in obeying the laws of the land. I practice and teach this obedience since justice is the moral signification of law. Injustice denotes the absence of law. Each day I pray for the pacification of all national difficulties, for the brotherhood of man, for the end of idolatry and infidelity, and for the growth and establishment of Christian religion, Christ's Christianity. I also have faith that my prayer availeth, and that he who is overturning will overturn until he whose right it is shall reign. Each day I pray, God bless my enemies, make them thy friends, give them to know the joy and the peace of love.
Beautiful.
Yes, thank you. And from Miscellaneous Writings, we today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind. For then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Our subject today is Adam and fallen man, the golden text, 2 Corinthians. If any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. So I'd like to hear from you all how that applies to you, how it has been applying to you, how you've been changing, what it means.
Well, for me, I'll think, God, what do you think? What do you tell me about this situation? I don't look at the physical situation the same way as I used to. And I don't take things just for granted, well, this is bad or this is good. I say, God, you tell me what this is. And I get a better sense of what the truth is. And so I take a deeper look at it, and I try to see from the spiritual view.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Colleen. That's having Be Thou My Vision, O Lord of my heart. And it also applies to what Parthens wrote on the forum. He was saying that, putting on the new man, that's the soul, our soul senses, and putting off the material senses, seeing everything humanly from a human point of view, which is usually goes back to self. How does it affect me? It's a very self-centered type of vision.
So what is the belief that Mrs. Eddy is handling here, Adam and fallen man? Why is it a subject for lessons?
We believe in a false, what is completely false about what the real man is. Going back with what you were talking about, Mary, the golden text, I think of the new birth, that article she wrote in Miscellaneous Writings. It's a new day now. I need to know who I am.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very prevalent belief among mankind that we're mortal, and that if we ever were perfect, we had fallen from grace, or, you know, or some silly kind of theory to explain that even if we ever were, you know, God's creation, we have fallen somehow from grace as a rationale for justifying the belief that we are mortal. And that's what leads to sin, disease, and death, and all the other beliefs about existence.
That's why we have all these problems.
That is why we think we do, yes.
Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
And the antidote to all this is in the Golden Text, which is
to be in Christ.
To be in Christ, yeah. I remember it took years of training and beating by a really, really good practitioner to get me to stop thinking about things humanly, to rely on the Christ mind, to go to God for answers. I mean, it wasn't an easy process, and it wasn't a quick process. But as it sort of sunk in, I began to realize the reason all things are become new is because there's no connection. There's no connection between what God tells me and what my senses or human beliefs tell me. There's absolutely no overlap. It's like a totally different existence. And it's like walking out of the darkness into light. And I think that that's what many of us have felt.
It's really wonderful, Mrs. Eddy's understanding of Genesis, her whole chapter on this, and to be able to see so clearly what this Adam dream is about. So whenever you hear people complaining about climate change, politics, all the diseases, they are talking about the Adam dream. And it would be as if you were just, let's talk about my dream I had last night and how awful it is. That doesn't make it any more real. And one thing that helped me too, because I used to have a fear of being afraid, you know, that statement of Job, what I greatly feared hath fallen upon me. So when I finally realized that, if it's fallen upon me, I'm just having a bad dream. And I can awaken from that dream. So I'd never have to be afraid of anything. You really, with the right understanding, you would never be afraid of a dream. You would know it's just a dream. You've had those dreams, and you wake up and you say, phew, just a dream. Well, so it is with all sin, disease, and death. However horrible it might seem when you're in the middle of it, it's nothing more than a dream. And maybe all the people around you seem to be in the dream too, but you can wake up from it. Never anything to fear. Sooner or later you'll figure it out, so why not sooner? But only Mrs. Eddy explains it so clearly. So Linda, give us our watching point.
Watch number 294. Watch that you test yourself for a scientific thought as follows. When an image of discord or sickness flashes across the screen of your thinking, and you think of it as disease in your body, you may know that your thought is off its scientific basis. If you immediately call it nothing because it traces back to nothing, you may know that your thought is right. And if your perception is spiritual, the image will disappear. The test is as logical as would be one for drunkenness. If a picture of a pink elephant should flash across your mind, if you thought it were really, you were really seeing such a phenomena, that would prove that you were drunk.
Thank you.
Drunken view.
And that's a very good, this is the renewing of your mind. What are you accepting? If you have some negative thing come to you, or some pain, or some thing flashing in front of you that seems very real, are you accepting it as what is true?
Or are you drunk?
Are you drunk?
I think sometimes, because of the frequency of some thought or something, you kind of think, oh, this is for sure, this is here to stay. But the thought that every wrong thinking or pain or whatever is transient, it only comes to go away, I think that has been helpful for me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How many times in the Bible does it say it comes to pass? That means it comes to go. It doesn't come to stay. And in the lesson in Genesis, it says that God gave man dominion over all things, over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And yet we always are saying, I have no control over this. I'm helpless. These thoughts just come, or all these circumstances, they just keep happening. I just get out of one problem, and then I have another problem. I have no control. Well, who says you have no control?
The devil.
Yes, and he's not your friend. It's just erroneous suggestion. And the quicker you kick it out, the better off you are. But if you have a discussion with it, it's getting a toehold, foothold, stronghold in belief.
And in the Bible it says, resist the devil, and it will what?
Leave from you.
Yeah. As Florence said, it comes to go, not to stay. But we do have to resist it. And when we resist it with the truth, we have all the power in the universe to make it go.
Because that's the all power of God, and that is the dominion that's been given to you.
Human will won't make it go.
It will not. And that's why we always go back to those pages 390 to 393 in Science and Health, because it's telling you this dominion that you have. Exercise this God-given authority. Take possession of your body and govern its feelings and action. Rise in the strength of spirit, not human will, to resist all that is unlike good. And then God has made you capable of this, and nothing can vitiate the ability and power divinely bestowed on you. So this is what God is saying. God isn't saying you're a helpless victim who has no control over it. Whatever situation you are in, be it ever so severe, Mrs. Eddy said, God's tender lesson is there to teach you. But you have the dominion over the situation, whatever that is. You're not a helpless victim, even though it seems people are bossing you around and telling you what to do. And we can prove this dominion. And I know many of you have and are. And this is rising up out of the Adam dream, which never has anything good to say. Okay, any more comments on this? On the responsive reading or the golden text?
Well, and I would just like to emphasize one more time, it's been said, but when we do rise in the strength of spirit, which is the truth, the divine truth, that is having the mind of Christ. Trying to resist something with human will is not the mind of Christ. and it does not heal. That's called faith cure. It's called New Age. And the error doesn't leave. It only hides to come back
again.
Stronghold.
When they're stronger.
Right, exactly.
Or seem stronger.
Exactly.
Because I think human will itself is come and go. It's not something you even have all the time.
Exactly.
How can you tell the difference between human will and God's will?
Human will never gave me peace, that I find that I, as I practice the steps here.
Very
never
good.
Never did anything lastingly.
Yeah.
Right. It never totally eliminates the fear, does it?
No.
Makes you think you got rid of the fear when you have it, and then you find out you have it.
It just
human will. Always goes back to self. It's what I want. It's my reaction that I planned that I want to execute myself. Whereas the divine will involves a release to God, and a will, a listening to Him, and a willing obedience to it. Whereas human will, of course, is driven.
That's another very, very important point. Human will is self-centered. When you take on the mind of Christ and apply the truth, you free all mankind from that false belief. You include everybody in that prayer.
Thank you. And as you do this more and more, the renewing of your mind, renewing implies back to the original. As we know, little, young, innocent children have that mind, sweet, loving, innocent thoughts, and they get trained, educated in this human stuff. So we have to renew our minds. That's why when you have children, it's such a solemn responsibility to keep their minds as pure as possible.
And so, cultivate their spiritual sense.
Yes.
And the truth. That's why the Sunday school is so essential.
Yes. So as your mind is being renewed, you're replacing it. And this is a mighty struggle. This doesn't always come easily when you've been thinking all these horrible, wrong, hateful, revengeful, jealous, fearful, negative thoughts all your life. It doesn't just all of a sudden go. You've got to be persistent and watchful. That's why the watching comes in.
And be grateful for it happening.
Thank you. That helps. To be grateful rather than complain about it.
And patient for the process.
Yes, patient for the process.
It is a long road back.
So, as you do this, and then you get more wary, and when the erroneous thoughts knock on your door, you're much quicker to recognize them. That's the great thing. And get rid of them. When you're steeped in it, you it's hard to figure out what's what and who's who. But you keep at it, and your compass is what?
Uh-oh. The Bible
and science and health. Yes. The Bible and science and health, of course. It's your compass. You match your thoughts. Do your thoughts line up to what Mrs. Eddy is telling you, what the Bible is telling you? If they don't, then you bring them, rein them in, so they do. I wrote in the forum, bring every thought in captivity to the Christ. The more you do it, the better you become, just like a playing tennis. You get stronger, quicker, more adept.
And that's why it is our textbook. It is the map, the roadway, if you will, to lead us to our own relationship with God. Start studying it, you're going to have tests to pass. And when you pass those tests, you become a different person. You have a stronger relationship with God. That's That's why it's such a wonderful path to take. It doesn't get any better than that.
So if you find yourself in the lion's den, then you take your tips from Daniel. You look toward the light, and you keep gazing at the light. You don't look at the lion. Think about the lion. You look at the light and think about God. You praise him, grateful. Grateful even for the experience, because it'll prove a stepping stone higher. So, Jeremy, I'd like you to get into your form.
Well, from the fourth citation, Genesis 1, and God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth and subdue it. And so for whatever reason, this time subdue really, really stuck with me. But it also brought to mind what Miss Singletary quoted from Bicknell Young last weekend's roundtable, which is, quote, earth is our mortal concept of heaven. Heaven is our real awareness of the earth. In other words, heaven is the earth correctly understood, end quote. And then I looked up the definition of subdue in the 1828 Webster's, and one of the things it said was, subduing implies conquest or vanquishing, but it implies also more permanence of subjection to the conquering power than either of these words. So just the thought that we are supposed to subdue this mortal concept of heaven and replenish in ourselves the real awareness of what the earth is, which is heaven. That's really been in my thought quite a bit this week, so very grateful for that.
That's lovely. I think that's such a wonderful thought. That's why I have little patience when people complain to me about problems on this earth, because you are malpracticing on it. And I don't care what the complaint is. You're malpracticing. And all you have to do is turn on your computer and you'll find it all. And that to me is the tree.
The knowledge of good and evil.
Yes. Yes. And it's endless. It's just endless. And people send me these things like, Mary, you figure this out. You pray for this and heal it. And I say, no, you. It came to you. You do it.
Take responsibility.
Yes.
That's why we're learning to watch.
That's why we're learning to watch. And many of the people don't even do a watch. So, that's just darn laziness. You can look on the internet, and that is your tree of knowledge of good and evil. Check out it all, and it is just goes on and on and on of all the troubles of mankind forever and ever. That's what you want to do, and what is the result of that? What does the lesson say? Where does it lead you?
Death.
Death. Death. Yes. So have a good time with that one. Okay, but you are malpracticing, and I don't like anyone who malpractices on our wonderful earth that God has given us, and it's heaven on earth, and we make it that way. If we see it that way, you know, Mrs. Eddy, she says you should have a great tenderness for all things. She loved even the blade of grass under her feet. And I think it was Ray in a bulletin board. I didn't get to read it, but she was talking about the newsletter and the beautiful poem about trees. How?
I don't have it. By Joyce Kilmer. He was the author. I don't have it in front of me, so I wish I could recite it because it's gorgeous.
It is. The beautiful poem about trees, and that only God could make a tree. And then she goes on to say what Mrs. Eddy says about that she sees every leaf, every single leaf is declaring the allness of God, something that's definitely a paraphrase. But think about that as you're driving around town. Every single leaf is declaring God's presence and power. You know, Jim told me a beautiful story, Jim in Arizona, that he, on his deck, has a hummingbird that comes and visits. And now the hummingbird has had children. I don't think I've ever seen a little baby hummingbird. I mean, they're already so tiny. I don't know if he's there if he wants to say anything, but... And so I was telling that to people yesterday. I thought that was such a thrilling story. So yesterday, when Gary and I went home and we were outside in our yard, there was a ruby-throated hummingbird. Oh. He just came right by us, and then he was in all the flowers, and we just got to look at him up close. I mean, just such beauty, the beauty of God's world, everything. And another little story is that, well, some of you know we've moved recently, and we have, our property has a little pond. I call it the Lake of Shining Waters from the Anne of Green Gables book. Anyway, it's a little pond, and then we have a little pool. Well, the frogs seem to get mixed up, and sometimes in the morning I find frogs in the pool, which, and Jeremy bought me a little froggy fence so they can climb out, but sometimes they don't seem to climb out. So I told Jeremy to please check it in the morning because he lives close by. So I call it the frog patrol. And so anyway, so in the morning he'll come by. And the first morning, what happened?
The first morning there was a really big frog in there. And so I took the filter out, and he was in there, and he sort of was looking over the top as I was walking down to the pond. So I was telling him, you have this really beautiful pond. You don't need anything else. So tell your friends you're all good, you know. So I dropped him off, and this was a couple weeks ago. There has not been another frog in there.
Grandfather Frog told all the little ones to stay out of the pool. Pools aren't good for frogs. So, but that's the mental nature of all things. And so Jeremy is my frog patrol. He keeps them in the pond where they belong.
We call him the frog whisperer now.
You might get a lot of calls.
I'm whispering to your frogs too.
But it works. It works. You treat God's creatures with love and kindness and respect, and they obey.
I think people have used this thought to get rid of pests as well.
True.
Sure.
And you know, pests, God never made a pest. Mm-hmm. This is the human belief that we put on them and call them pests, the father of. But I don't think God ever did. I mean, even Eustace talks about the germs, that they have a function, and that we should love them. I mean, how can you, if you're hating something or fearing something, whatever it is, how can you rid yourself of it? You don't. You'll find it everywhere. So, but this is seeing God's creation. And if we don't, who will? If you are indulging in all the negativity about it all, and looking either at the terrible people who do the terrible things, and do the terrible polluting, and do the terrible whatever else, what healing value are those thoughts? Tell me, is there any healing value to that thought? That should be a thought that should repel you. Shouldn't be a thought you embrace and think, wow, I'm going to think about this for the rest of the day and share it with all my friends.
But to me, that, since I engaged in that for so long, now I feel that was the opposite of what Jesus said. I was pulled down, and I pulled down everyone towards me.
Well, yes, instead of, if I be lifted up, I will draw all men unto me. So we are not having two creations here. One, this awful Adam dream. The Adam dream, remember, is a dream. Just an awakening process. There's the one creation. It's heaven on earth, but you determine that.
For yourself.
For yourself.
For and in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely
die.
So why go there if you know better? And that's why we're here, is to learn to know better.
Like they say, you get what you expect. Yes, you do. You receive, and you receive what you believe. You entertain these thoughts, and you wonder why it keeps happening, why the bugs keep bothering you, or the pollution keeps getting worse, or whatever you think. It keeps going on and on because you in your thought. You'll externalize it instead of thinking the truth about it. And, of course, as we just said, we treat everything with great tenderness. You treat the world with respect. You don't pollute. You express economy and value. You love it. And you see others as doing that, too. And Mrs. Eddy said we should pray daily for the creatures, the birds, all of it. And we should. And, you know, yesterday in the Bible study, there was something Mrs. Eddy said about justice and injustice. While God's justice is far greater than any injustice, because injustice, because it's not of God, it has no power. Again, we think it does by building it up in our thought. You can render it powerless. Now, Bruce has this tiny little backyard, and he has more crops.
More fruits and vegetables.
More fruits and vegetables than anybody I've ever known. But he loves it. And every little inch of that space he loves. And he has cherries, and figs, and potatoes, and onions, and tomatoes, and blackberries, and raspberries. You name it, Bruce has it. And those of you who have visited in the summer have enjoyed his produce. But he loves it. And because he loves it, it flourishes.
Well, it does teach me some lessons. And one of them is, there's no way on earth that I can make anything grow. So it's an example of the divine activity God is doing. And the other thing I noticed, that all the flowers out there, they all look up. They look towards the light. That's what flowers naturally do. So there's many lessons to be learned by nature, because after all, it is God's creation. And they are obedient to the mind that made them. So I should use that as an example, and I cherish having this example to look at each day and then following suit, of course.
That's beautiful. So true. So how many times do we try to force things to grow? It's not going to work. And that includes anything. You know, with our church, even with our church, maybe especially with our church, at one time there was talk about, well, we got to do marketing, we got to do this, we have to do that. But God gives the increase. We just are working and knowing truly and doing this watches, doing our work. He'll bring it, as we've talked about it. All these seeds we're planting, they're being planted all over the world. Can you or I or anyone control that? No.
No chance.
No, not a chance. Not a chance.
So, and God forbid that we should ever try.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if we, does worrying when you go out, do you go out every morning, Bruce, and worry over your plants?
A lot of good that would do, huh? Oh,
you have to release it to God. And that can be a hard thing sometimes, but you release it to God and let it grow, and it will. It'll do its thing. I thought we had such a cool spring here in the Northeast, and normally the lilacs and everything come out by May 1st, but it was so chilly here, it was like they didn't want to put their buds out. But then as we had some warm weather, everything just burst forth. Like, I'm right on time. I'm on my schedule. And now everything is so beautiful. And did any of us do that? No. God does it all. So it's hard for me to imagine how anyone could not believe in God when you all you have to do is look out your window. So we are redeeming the Adam dream. We are, well, I don't know if it's redeemable. We are tossing it out and
replacing it.
Yes. Waking up to God's beautiful creation.
Transforms
it. Yes. To the
truth. I love Mrs. Eddy's phrase when she says, the beauty of nature, a hieroglyph of deity.
Yes, I do too. Beautiful. Everywhere. So if you think you're experiencing the Adam dream, you don't have to. You can awaken and see the kingdom of heaven on earth.
Like the man at the pool.
Yes, the man at the pool and the story of the lesson this week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Linda, your forum. Spiritual Footsteps.
Okay, I'm going to read from Spiritual Footsteps, chapter 57. And, he writes, quote, "When the master said, 'I can of mine own self do nothing,' he implied that he had no substitute human acumen or sagacity. All that he knew, all the mental powers he had, came through inspiration and reflection. Therefore, the moment he lost his inspiration, he lost his knowledge. Hence, we might modernize his above statement thus, quote, 'The only thing I can give out is what I can get from God. When I have not that, I have nothing to give,'" end quote.
Thank you. Carpenter emphasizes this point over and over and over. So that's why if you're feeling out of sorts, maybe just be quiet till you get your joy back, sense of love. You have nothing to give unless it's from God.
I thought it was a good rebuke to this human goodness and that thing we can give to everybody. Give, give, give. But you're not really giving anything unless it's God. There's no God in it. That was really, I just found it really shocking how little I thought about God till I came to Plainfield. It seemed like it wasn't really on my mind. I thought I was worshiping God, but he was hardly on my thought.
I think, well, we all had to come to that realization, Andy. So I speak with the tongues of men and of angels.
Yeah.
I have not inspiration or love or charity.
And that human goodness, that's a sense of being driven. That's the will. And actually, we talked about will. One of the cities yesterday was will. Represented will. You just get on this treadmill and just, you're going to do this, and you're going to bless these people, whether they like it or not.
Like walking that little old lady across the street where she doesn't want to go.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, the Carpenter books are so valuable, and all of you should have every book and study it deeply, and certainly Watching Points, and watch his prayers and arguments, footsteps, precepts. They're wonderful, and he explains things so simply and clearly, and God bless him, and I know he does.
I'm always grateful for the analogies he uses.
They do. It's deep understanding. And, you know, here in Plainfield, we were so privileged to get his books early on and to have this opportunity not only to study them, but to apply them in our daily life, learn to apply them, because he explains it so clearly. Yes. And now, all of you do. Thank God for that. So, Florence, you want to talk about your genuine imitation?
Yes, that was just so funny. In
I think it was in Mexico, and we went by, and these men selling these bags, and they would say, "This is a genuine imitation." And the phrase is just funny because how can you have a genuine imitation? But in thinking of in the lesson, Mrs. Eddy talks about poor counterfeits. It kind of makes me think, well, at least that was genuine imitation, so you could mistake it for the real. But if it's a poor counterfeit, it's got to be so far removed from the truth or what is true about the object that we shouldn't even go there. And in relating it to, you know, man, the mortal man and the spiritual man, the ideal man, it just brings a very clear distinction as to how much our efforts is to be made towards, you know, renewing our mind and getting the right man, the idea of man as our, what we are. It just makes it clear to me, that's all.
Thank you very much. And I like what Colleen said in the beginning about, you know, asking God what's going on here, what's really going on. God always knows the imitation from the real thing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people will tell you things, and that's not really what their problem is. It's just the cover-up of what their problem is. So we always need to be asking God for the real McCoy, so to speak.
Because that's all that God knows. And that's all that exists. And that's why when the counterfeit presents itself, the power you have to deal with it is the fact that it is totally unreal. It has nothing to do with what it is the counterfeit of.
Okay, Carol, would you read 5 in Science and Health?
The forbidden fruit of knowledge, against which wisdom warns man, is the testimony of error, declaring existence to be at the mercy of death, and good and evil to be capable of commingling. This is the significance of the scripture concerning the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. This growth of material belief, of which it is said, "In the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die." Human hypotheses first assume the reality of sickness, sin, and death, and then assume the necessity of these evils because of their admitted actuality. These human verdicts are the procurers of all discord.
Thank you. So I like that where she says, this growth of material belief. Growth. Have any growth? what material beliefs are you growing? You having a little garden of material beliefs somewhere? Really, check yourself.
Yeah, I think when we bring, you know, maybe past history into justifying something wrong, it keeps growing.
Yeah, it does. It does. That's the danger of all these self-justification, self-pity. You're growing your belief rather than nurturing your understanding.
This is true on a personal level, which we have control of. I mean, we have control of what we nurture within our own consciousness. But it's also true on a society level, isn't it? As a society, what are we growing in our schools? Are we growing beliefs, or are we growing the truth, the understanding of the truth? And that's, you know, that's a reflection of what we as a society value.
Or what are we growing in our homes, you know?
Exactly. In our churches.
Uh-huh. Everywhere. At work.
At work. Thank you. Yeah. So we, you know, we are all gardeners, if you will, in our own gardens.
And when the weeds come, rip them out.
Rip them out quick.
Yeah.
Don't indulge in them. And
if we don't, we deserve what Zeddy referred to as, oh, stupid gardener.
We deserve that rebuke. So, and there's no question, we are bombarded with the Adam dream everywhere you turn. So you have to use some wisdom and discretion about what you take in and listen to. And you must always, never absent from your post, never off guard, never ill-humored, never unready to work for God, as was read Wednesday. You can't afford not to be. And it's as interesting as Linda said, she couldn't believe when she finally woke up how many times in the Bible and in science and health, in everything, is watch, watch, watch. And again, that was the characteristic of one of the cities, unwatchfulness. Will, unwatchfulness, sensuality, the list of them. It describes what will be your ruin if you allow it, and only in belief, because you will have just jumped into the Adam dream and said, here I am, I'm thinking along with everybody else, rather than correcting it and waking up from it. And then the other I love too, about the press unwittingly sending forth many sorrows and diseases among the human family. This is just what I was talking about. It does this by giving names to diseases and by printing long descriptions which mirror images of disease distinctly in thought. You read these things, you Google it, and then you read it all. A new name for an ailment affects people like a Parisian name for a novel garment. Everyone hastens to get it. And you see, we have certain things through the years that everyone has, depending. So, you know, now Alzheimer's, allergies, I call it the big A's, autism, all those are the popular things we're all thinking about. 10 years from now, it'll be something different. A new slideshow will parade in front of us. So, let us know the utter nothingness of this dream and stay out of it. So we will close. Our bell is ringing.
Bell is rung.
From Miscellaneous Writing Prospectus, Mrs. Eddy.
Page 2. The signs of these times portend a long and strong determination of mankind to cleave to the world, the flesh, and evil, causing great obscuration of spirit. When we remember that God is just and admit the total depravity of mortals, alias mortal mind, and that this Adam legacy must first be seen and then must be subdued and recompensed by justice, the eternal attribute of truth, the outlook demands labor, and the laborers seem few. Today we behold but the first faint view of a more spiritual Christianity that embraces a deeper and broader philosophy and a more rational and divine healing. The time approaches when divine life, truth, and love will be found alone the remedy for sin, sickness, and death, when God, man's saving principle, and Christ, the spiritual idea of God, will be revealed.
Thank you. So this Adam dream, seen and subdued, and that's what we're doing, and we're all laborers in the field. Let us not be uncounted. So
thank you all. Let's get to work.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.